Okay, thanks, Greg. So as Greg said, there are a series of other things going on that we're involved with at Nottingham, and I just want to take you through that. And really, the sort of starting point for me is that Greg's gone through a lot of the science that's involved in this bioenergy programme. And my starting point for this is, well, okay, let's assume we can do all of this really complicated, hard science stuff that I frankly don't really understand that well. So I'm hoping that by the end of the programme I'll understand it all a lot better. But just because we can do all of this, from a scientific point of view, does it actually make any sense? So from an environmental point of view, or from a financial point of view, does it actually make sense to do it? And that's where we start at with this concept of sustainability. So within the programme that we're looking at, we're looking at this sustainability framework, as Catherine Smart calls it, when she gives this type of presentation, in that there are three aspects that we need to think about from any technology that we develop. So one is, from a social point of view, is it acceptable? So will society think it's a good idea, broadly speaking? Is it environmentally sensible, and then is it economically sensible? And we bring all of these three things together to try and have an overview of whether this sort of new technology and this new scientific approach is actually going to make any sense in a wider context. And that's really what I want to go through with you in terms of the sort of wider sustainability aspects of bioenergy that this program's looking at. So there are three broad areas that the sustainability part of the program is going to examine. I'm going to give you a little bit of information about each one of these. The first one is what's called life cycle analysis of the whole process, and that's really looking across the whole industrial process from when straw, when this really hard, horrible stuff leaves the farm gate and it gets turned into petrol, effectively. It's looking at the environmental and the energy accounting that needs to go into that. So how much energy do we need to put into transforming this straw into petrol? And what are the sort of carbon footprinting impacts of that? The farm systems assessment is the part of the project that I'm particularly involved in, and that's looking very much at the farm level issues. So in terms of different crops that farmers can grow, the different energy that a farm can produce and the different financial consequences that that can bring, and also looking at the wider sort of carbon footprinting at a farm level point of view, and I'll touch on some more of that. And then finally, there's more of the social aspects to this type of technology. So when we're developing a new technology, does it make sense? Will society like it? And if you want to think, well, is that really important? Certainly where we are here, all you have to do is think back to GM tomatoes. They came onto the market and they disappeared quite quickly because socially they weren't acceptable. So it's that side of the technology and the science that we need to get a handle on as well. So in terms of life cycle analysis, this is actually being led by some colleagues at the University of Bath. And what they do is look at the energy that's needed to convert straw to petrol. And what that involves is it involves them mapping out the whole process. So they set off and they look at all of the linkages that are involved in the industrial process. And they're calling this seed to wheel. So effectively from when it leaves the farm, goes through some processing situations that are going to change as Greg and colleagues improve the efficiency of this, and then you get to the end use in terms of petrol. So they map it all out and they calculate how much energy is going into the process. So it's really an energy accounting exercise. They're just mapping out how much energy goes in, and hopefully the process will generate more energy out than it actually takes to actually produce the petrol. If it doesn't, then we've got a problem. But if it doesn't, then we need to know that before we sort of go to government and say, oh, this is such a great thing, why don't we do it? If we're actually going to use more energy to produce this petrol than it's actually worth. And then the environmental aspect is looking at carbon footprinting, in effect, or things like that. So what are your carbon emissions from doing this process? But they're also going to be looking at some wider points within that. So within the environmental side of things. I'll be looking at particular hotspots of the processing, because there may be particular parts of the processing process, not a very good phrase, but there'll be particular aspects in that where they may look at and go, well, that uses, for example, a lot of water there, and that then creates other environmental problems. So it may be that when we're looking at this industrial process, there are bits where they go, we're not really happy with that, and are there ways that we can actually try and improve that bit of the process so, for example, it uses less water? But the bottom line of this, as I've got there, is does it make environmental sense? If it does, that's great. If it doesn't, then we need to keep working on the process to see if we can come up with an efficient way of doing it so that it does make environmental sense. Okay, so that's one theme. The second part is the one that I'm particularly involved in, and this is looking at issues at the farm level. And whilst farming has sometimes got a very simplistic view, it's really quite a complex system, and that's why we're looking at it at a system level in terms of the farm. We're not just looking at a crop of wheat. We're looking at what farmers do on farms, mainly arable farms, because they can grow a range of crops, they use energy, they produce things. And we're particularly looking at these three things, energy, environment, and economics. And what we will be doing is we're going to be measuring what's called the trade-offs. So if we want farmers to produce as much energy from a farm as possible, we might have to pay them to do that because that might not be the most profitable plan for them, for example. So depending on what we want farmers to do as a society, we need to know what the trade-offs are. And to do that, we're building a farm systems model, which is abbreviated to METER. So if you hear about the Nottingham METER model, that stands for Managing, I'm going to get this wrong, Environment, no? Narissa, tell me what this means.
Managing energy and emissions trade-offs
in agriculture. We had at least an hour's meeting to get that name. So we're looking at just at the farm level, how much energy comes in, how much energy comes out, looking at the impact of various options, again, so carbon footprinting at the farm level and the different economics that you get from different plans at a farm level of what the farmer can do. And we're looking at it at a system level because, as I say, farms are not just a single crop. Particularly arable farms, they grow crops in rotations, they grow crops at different times of the year, and all of these possibilities mean that there are different energy inputs and outputs needed that we need to try and capture. Now, the other thing about farmers is that they tend to like doing their own thing. Most of us do, but farmers in particular really like doing their own thing. And so we're going to go and talk to farmers via some in-depth surveys. We're going to talk to about 250, hopefully, and we're going to ask them about their perceptions and their thoughts about using straw for biofuels, and also we'll ask them about other crops as well. And I'll come on at the end, I'll talk about what some of the other programs are doing in terms of bioenergy. But we're going to ask them about their perceptions and their understanding, because currently a lot of farmers in the east of England take this stuff. It comes off the back of a combine and it gets chopped up into bits about that long, and then it gets incorporated into the soil. And this funny stuff actually returns some nutrients to the soil, but it also helps the soil, it gives it soil structure. So if we're taking this away from soils, then there are some issues that farmers will possibly not be happy about. But the other thing is that by chopping this up and incorporating it into the soil, it means they can get on with their work a lot quicker. So if we're going to them and saying, actually, what we want to do is we want you to bale this so we can use it for fuel, some of them may not be very interested in getting involved in that, and we need to capture what their concerns are so that we can overcome that if we're going to actually have an industry built around this type of technology. And the wider aspect at the farm level is that we're going to look at the impact of using straw for bioenergy. We'll look at what might happen if they grow what are called dedicated biomass crops, so tall grasses, small trees that you can use for energy. Because if they do that, we'll have less land being used to grow food. So we're going to look at some of the food versus fuel impacts as well. Okay, so this is a screenshot of an example of something that we're taking to Cereals, which is a big exhibition where farmers go to find out lots about what's happening in the industry. And this is the front end of an example model, and we're going to take this to Cereals. And it's just an example where farmers can say, okay, well, I grow 100 hectares of this, 100 hectares of something else. We'll set this model off to calculate how much energy that will give them from a farm, how much profit it would give them, and they can play around with this and actually see what trade-offs, as in, if I grow more energy, do I lose more money? If I optimize for money, how much energy do I get out? And they can measure the trade-offs between these things. That's just the front end of a very complicated model. And that's, as I say, that's sort of a playing version that we're going to take for farmers to play with. So the final aspect of the bioenergy program that Nottingham is leading in this part are the social and ethical aspects. So this is looking at the wider dimensions, really. This is just a quote from the Sunday Times back in 2008 about biofuels, because this is part of the controversy about it, in that it's been blamed for using up food stock, but biofuels are now being used from otherwise waste material, effectively. So the current technology of biofuels is about using, as Greg said, it's about using corn or maize, and it's using, effectively, food products. And that's the first generation biofuels. The second generation that we're looking at is about using more waste products. So what does it involve and why are we doing it? Well, broadly speaking, any new technology can raise particular issues, uncertainties about whether it will work, is there environmental damage. Genetic modification is a classic example of people being concerned about what might happen if you eat something that's been genetically modified. What are the uncertainties of that? What might happen in the environment? So there are uncertainties about technologies, and there are also conflicts that people might be concerned about, particularly in a world that's running out of food, and the food versus fuel debate is a key part of that. I should say this is being led by Kate Miller's involved in this theme with a colleague, Sujatha Raman from University Park. So this is all about understanding the views of society in terms of what bioenergy is about. So they'll be learning about new technologies, looking back at old technologies as well. They'll be doing this by talking to people, analysing interviews, looking back at previous debates about new technologies and how that might work and how people might view them. And it's because you get this uncertainty and it leads to these challenges, these opportunities. This is called ethical reflection, and it's all about the acceptability of the technology. And part of what they're doing is they're going to be doing this throughout the process. So we're not going to get to the end of the 5 years and then suddenly think, is this process acceptable to society? It's much more about talking to people throughout the process, and if there are concerns that society has, can we, as the scientists, in the programme, change what we're doing to overcome those concerns? And it's really about stimulating the dialogue in terms of what people's expectations are, what their concerns are, what their issues are in relation to all of this new technology. Okay, so that's broadly what we're doing in LACE here at Nottingham. I think I'm right, Greg, in saying that we've probably got the most money out of the BBSRC programme. Is that broadly correct? It's probably one of the biggest of the programmes. Okay.
If you add animals and program.
Definitely. Okay. So I'm not going to go through these for two reasons. One, you need your lunch. Secondly, I don't know enough about them to tell you much. But, so Nottingham's got another programme led by Nigel Minton. And this is looking at bacteria, effectively. So using bacteria to generate biofuels. Rothamsted, who a lot of you will have heard of, they are looking at perennial biomass, and this is effectively dedicated biomass crops. Small trees, short rotation coppice it's called, or miscanthus, which I think is huge grass. So that's what they're looking at, and they're looking at optimising the production of that. My concern with that type of approach is that you get into the food versus fuel debate because you're using land to grow dedicated crops. Cambridge are looking at a programme that's looking at breaking down the cell wall sugars, I think, broadly speaking. So there's some crossover between some of these programmes. University of Dundee and colleagues are looking at the lignin, which is the stuff that makes this stand up. They're looking at breaking this down. So can you make the lignin in here, or can you make the cell walls easier to deconstruct, in a nutshell? That's what they're looking at. But the most exciting one for me, that I learnt about at the early part of this month, is what York are leading on, which are marine wood borer enzyme discovery programme, where they've got these little bugs, they're 2 millimetres long, and within these little bugs, they've got these enzymes that effectively live on wood, and they break down the wood to convert it into sugars to live, I suspect.
Yeah, it's called
a gribble. Yes, and it's fascinating, because they're looking at something that's in nature, it's exceptionally small, it's got enzymes in its gut, and they think we can harness this to produce biofuels. So I was kind of surprised by that. So that's broadly what's happening in the other programmes. And with that, I'm going to finish. But if you do want to learn more about the programme, there's an awful lot of information on our website, which is /bioenergy/lace. There are many, many people involved in Nottingham on this programme. So I would encourage you to go and have a look at that and get engaged with us in terms of learning more about it. If you want to ask questions, I'm sure Greg and I would be more than happy to try and answer any, or you can grab us at lunch. And just to reiterate what Jerry was saying, the next one of these talks, which we're hoping is going to be a series of talks, is going to be on global food security. Jerry has offered to say something within it. So next time you can actually hear from Jerry as well. Okay, I think with that I'll finish, and we can answer any questions or we can have lunch.
And one of the things that I'm sure you're aware of is that if you had a look at many crops 100 years ago, they were this high, and now they're this high. So the question I'd really sort of ask is, we've selected for crops that particularly produce a large amount of grain. Do you think there'll come a time when we'll start actually looking for wheat or barley crops which are taller, because there'll be more opportunity of getting other mass from them that we can utilise for biofuels?
In a nutshell, yes. I mean, as Jerry said, we've bred down crops to be quite short, largely because if they're too tall, they fall over, which is called lodging, which is a big problem in arable farming. So that's why we've tried to breed crops to be quite short. Straw has been a waste product, broadly speaking, a waste product. But if this stuff becomes valuable, and I mean really valuable, so in the eastern part of east of England, it probably doesn't have much of a value at all. And the reason for that is that it's bulky, and to transport it to anywhere where people might want to use it will cost a lot of money. In the west of the country, where there are a lot of livestock farmers, this stuff's quite valuable. Sometimes it could be £70 a tonne, £80 a tonne. But if this becomes really valuable, because Greg and colleagues can turn this into petrol, it could be worth £200 a tonne, for example. And if that happens, then farmers will want to grow as much of this as possible, as well as grain. So I think that we could see a reversal of that, but hopefully without minimising too much of how much grain we produce. Yeah. Termites, I have no idea, but why not? Yeah. I mean, Greg's looking at getting fungi from nature, but
presumably
break something down.
Termites?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got the bugs in their stomach.
So they've got those bugs in
they've got the same bugs.
Yeah.
Is there another question? Oh, gosh, they're all over the place.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, in a lot of the parts of the east of England, this gets chopped, put back into the soil. In certain parts of the country, it doesn't. It actually does get baled, it gets taken off, gets used for animal bedding that then eventually comes back into the soil through animal manures, so it does get returned. But even when we've broken this stuff down, we're not going to be using it all up. I'm not quite sure what this looks like once we've taken out all of the, broadly speaking, sugars that we want and what's going to be left, but there will be a residue, and we need to then work out how easy it is to get that back onto the land. But there are issues because it does remove nutrients by taking it away. But it may be that we end up with farmers supplying straw every other year or something, so that they're not constantly removing the straw from their farm, but they're doing it over a period of time.
There was a study quite recently in France where they found that if they only really needed to leave between 10 and 20% of the straw to maintain the quality. So there's a large amount you can remove without it being a problem.
So if the straw can be used for the fungi to eat and the yeast to feed on before it's used for fuel, isn't there a way to use it more directly so as to harvest also the energy?
If I understood that, is it you're saying don't bother turning it into fuel?
Well, is there a way to do it more directly so that instead of going through the process of turning it into fuel and losing the energy and burn it?
Yeah. There are a variety of approaches, and they're all really, we're all looking at all of them at Nottingham. There's the simplest, which is you just take that and put it into a power station. Turn it into electricity. And we all drive around in electric cars. There's a slight problem with that, in that if you try to run an aircraft on electricity, you need a 300-ton battery. And the aircraft will never take off. So we can't get away from using liquid fuels, because that's how we get the energy density to actually power some of our transport. So that's one thing, we could burn it. Another thing is something called pyrolysis. Please don't ask me what it is. You take the straw and you treat it at very, very high temperatures. It's sort of a flash temperature, so it doesn't burn, so you exclude oxygen. It doesn't burn, but it turns it into something that looks like bitumen. It actually turns it into an oil. You're sort of using high temperature to do what nature has done to it over millions of years by making it into coal and oil. You try to do it in a reactor at very high temperatures. You can get gases from it and oils, which can then be used directly for fuel. The problem is, they're not very clean. So the automobile industries don't like the idea of if you put this into the car, the engine will blow up. You can't guarantee what it's going to look like. Ethanol is easier to control. But there are other technologies, yeah, that we're looking at.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming. I hope you've gained something from it. I've learned something from Greg anyway. Hope you come along to the next one, 29th of July. Let's have some lunch.